As the cognoscenti know, Laura Tingle is one of the great choristers in Canberra, and that's her voice introducing you to Late Night Live. And by amazing coincidence, we're about to mingle with Tingle. I want to talk to her about budgetary matters. Then I'll be introducing you to Pascal Lamé, who's was Le Grand Fromage of the World Trade Organization. These days he has a very different role, going around the world peddling his agenda for the future. And then we're going to look at a superfood called quinoa. You've probably heard all about it. I was remarkably ignorant of the topic. And the issue is, who owns this food, which may, in fact, according to its promoters, save the planet? Now, Laura, in Rome, just before the gladiators went out and sort of threw spears at each other, they would approach the royal box, look up at Caligula or Julius or Nero and say, "We who are about to die, salute you." I understand that that gladiatorial spirit was in evidence today in the government caucus meeting.
Oh, they're selfless, Philip. They're selfless. This, of course, was the first party room meeting since the budget, and let's face it, it hasn't been going well for the government in a political sense, but apparently virtually nobody, except perhaps the inestimable Ron Boswell from Queensland, nobody criticised the budget. There was a speech which was described as Churchillian by Tony Abbott, saying how fantastic the budget was and this government was not for turning, and it was the budget provided all those things that people wanted, like consistency.
A bit of Churchill, a bit of Thatcher. This is absolutely inspirational.
It was inspirational. Apparently there were no tears shed. We did ask about that, but our cartoonist at the Financial Review did a wonderful cartoon a couple of weeks ago called Bizarro World, and never was a more apt description applied to Canberra, because there was this wonderful disconnect between the absolute, I suppose it's all that the government can really do in the circumstances, which is to say, nothing to see here, it's all going splendidly, we have a plan and we're sticking to it, and it's very brave, despite all the signs that it's not going all that well at all.
But they're not saying that privately, are they? There does seem to be a certain amount of despondency once they're out of the party room.
There's despondency, and I think there is, in some ways, the party room shares the confusion of the electorate about exactly what the government executive has got them into. If you think about all the things that are in the budget, like changes to pensions, getting rid of John Howard's beloved family tax benefit system. Well, it hasn't got rid of it. That's an outrageous press gallery exaggeration. But cutting all
typical,
of those sorts
typical
of,
you, Tingle. Absolutely,
yeah, typical. Yes, absolutely outrageous. But really slicing into those things, it really attacks the coalition base. And it's left a lot of MPs, I think, beyond angry, sort of vaguely confused and not quite sure what they're selling. And, of course, the budget has a lot of contradictory messages.
Well, while they're holding firm, the electorate has come to very different conclusions. They're not too happy at all, are they? And it's odd to see such a phalanx of polls agreeing on the depth, the scale of the government's crisis.
Yes, I mean, the Washington Post, of all places, describes the Prime Minister as possibly the most unpopular Prime Minister in the world, which is really saying something, I think.
For a minute, I sympathised, almost sympathised. I did.
Yeah, so the polls are all showing that not only is the government in a bad state, but that the Prime Minister isn't well regarded, shall we sort of euphemistically say. The sort of political parties are polling marginal seats and showing swings of 7 or 8%, which are, of course, if as they say, replicated on election day, would be catastrophic. But I think the main problem really in the long term is what the polls are showing about the Prime Minister, who has never fabulously well liked by the voters, but it's showing that he's now not only regarded as untrustworthy but inconsistent. And I think this is, I really think this is the problem that Tony Abbott's going to have in the medium term, Philip. Once the initial rage wears off and people are cynical about his broken promises and stuff, people still don't know what exactly it is he stands for.
You know, when you and I started talking all those years ago, I used to make up this little story about how you hid behind a rubber plant in party meetings. And from that vantage point today, did you happen to spot the mysteriously absent Malcolm Turnbull?
Oh, Malcolm is very quiet, isn't he? Malcolm Turnbull is, of course, the man people keep asking you about. They'll say, but when's Malcolm coming back? I mean, they were saying this to me within 6 weeks of the election, and this is people in the business community in places. And you will have noticed he's once again drawing on cartoonists because they're a very good weather guy, better than taxis. Malcolm has started reappearing in cartoons. The word is he's out talking, helping out the backbench at fundraisers and things because with voters, of course, he remains a hugely popular figure.
But he's not at all popular within the Liberal Party. The attitude to him is almost as hostile as people felt about Rudd.
Absolutely. So there are so many interesting dynamics here. I think Joe Hockey had made his big play to be regarded as the next guy, if you like, with this budget, but everybody's really just too consumed by thinking about what Tony Abbott's done to them to really think about what it means for Joe Hockey. So they're sort of...
He doesn't have plausible deniability, does he, Joe?
No, he doesn't. So they've leapfrogged right back to Malcolm. People are talking about Scott Morrison, but we'll just put that to one side for a moment. But Malcolm's there. He seems to have been learning his lessons. He's out trying to charm the backbench, but doing so in an absolutely impeccable fashion where nobody can accuse him of any sort of disloyalty or stirrings in any way, shape or form.
Now, of course, the traditionally the Libs use Textor for, you know, focus grouping. Mm-hmm. Surely Textor must have picked up before the delivery of the budget the anxieties that we now see and we now hear so loudly.
Well, one of the criticisms of the government internally is that the Prime Minister's office, also known as Peter Credlin, the criticism is very personal about her, is that they won't take advice. The rumour around the place is that one of the people that they won't take advice from is Mark Textor. So I don't know. You know, these are always these sort of urban myths that float around the building, Philip, but, you know, you do wonder the extent to which they've actually taken on board any advice that he may have given them.
I must ask you this. To what extent has Shorten been able to capitalise on the problems? Is he emerging as a plausible Prime Minister?
Look, he's better placed than he was 2 weeks ago, but people still don't really give him a lot of credence. They sort of see him as a bit superficial, bit of a, not exactly a used car salesman, that's a bit unkind, but they don't see him as a person of great substance. So he still has a problem there, I think, but at the moment, I think Labor's playing it reasonably smart in the sense that they haven't just gone out and opposed everything in the budget and thus made themselves the story, which, of course, the coalition always wants Labor to be the story. But they also have reserved some of their positions so that they just haven't surrendered the field to the minor parties to be the only players in the debate. So they've kept themselves in play. They're having some fairly inconsistent positions, I'd have to say, but so is the government. It's early days, but it's not a wildly impressive picture, Philip. But it's
Kalay, we're having a lovely chat with Laura Tingle, and I know how much the Gladys love it when you drop in. Now, a while ago, we were hearing sort of the petrels being pounded by alpha males talking about watch out, or we'll have a double dissolution. Mm. No one seems to be talking about that at the moment.
Well, they aren't. I would still argue, though, Philip, that you shouldn't rule it out for this reason. It seems a ridiculous idea at the moment. I freely accept that. But there is this machismo abroad in the coalition, and it goes to Tony Abbott's pugilistic nature on the one hand, and it goes to this point about not wanting to be seen to be dancing to Clive Palmer's tune. So I don't think it's something that you can rule out for the middle of this current term of Parliament.
So that could be, if you like, Abbott's nuclear option.
It's his nuclear option. And if you think about the way they've set up the budget, for a Prime Minister whose position on issues is not known, he will be able to argue whenever he calls an election, well, I've now laid out all of these different policies. You might like them, you might not like them, but at least you know where I stand on them. Where does Labor stand and where does Clive Palmer stand?
Laura, wonderful to talk to you. Laura Tingle, political editor at the Australian Financial Review. Always good to catch up with Laura. And coming up, as I said, the big cheese, or he was the big cheese, at the WTO, Pascal Lamy. LNL on RN.